Thanks very much. I'm amazed there's so many of you here. Thank you very much. I thought that this being friendship and no one turned up, I'd be like Billy No Mate. So I'm very grateful for such a full crowd. It's slightly daunting, to be perfectly honest. Friendship, the forgotten gift, finding your own tribe. There's a lot in that. And the areas I want to touch on, first of all, are a number of things. I hope I'll get through them all. There will be time for questions at the end. And I'm pretty unshockable, so whatever you want to ask is fine by me. Befriending yourself, I want to touch on that, learning to be your own best friend, which I think is sometimes neglected, particularly within the faith community. Refriending or befriending God, I think sometimes what happens is in our early Christian lives is that we have a view of God that's one thing, and as we go through a lot of different things, certain traumas, difficulties with children, our marriages, divorces in my case, we need to find a different kind of God or a different kind of relationship. Family friendships, I don't know about you. I hope you had a very happy family background. Mine was, I think, like a lot of people's, quite stressful. It's quite important as a child that you get what I call the right mirroring. If you get the right mirroring from your parents, and by the way, if you are a parent, please don't beat yourself up. There's a little boy over there. Because most parents are good enough and do the best with what they have. The tribe thing, finding your own tribe, and that's quite an interesting perspective, I think, within the Christian faith community and generally the idea that we have to love everybody, whatever that means, which, frankly, certainly for me, I don't know about you, is humanly impossible. So how do we deal with that? Friendship and community. Community is one of those words. Community, what do I mean? Revealing ourselves with those possibly we share our faith with in church, maybe at work. How do we go about that? The other and the stranger. There's a lot of talk in the Bible about befriending the other and loving the other. And I don't know about you, but as I've got a little older and perhaps a little bit more compassionate, because I've learned more compassion towards myself, the smelly, the ugly, the alcoholic, the sex addict are less frightening to me than perhaps they would have been earlier in my life. Friends with children. Now, very sadly, I don't have children, and that was just one of those things. It wasn't a deliberate choice. But I love children, and I really learn from them. And I was listening to a little boy screaming just outside my tent. I think, oh, poor parent, very difficult to learn in that situation. So I want to be realistic about it. But learning from children who are often extremely honest, sometimes painfully so, I think is important. Learning from the elderly. My mother has Parkinson's. And one of the things that that has taught me is to be very compassionate. I live in London. There's the tube there, as you know. It's very tempting when someone with a stick is getting off the tube and you're in a hurry to push and become irritated. But remember, of course, that the elderly can teach us so much. There's a lot about wisdom in the Bible and how much that is a huge gift. Men and women, I'll try and deal with that in some way. It'll be slightly full of generalizations, but I'll touch on that. And finally, how to lose friends. This may not always be something that's easy to grasp, but there are people in our lives that we sometimes need to lose in order to move on. And it may sometimes be our family. If there's been abuse in our family, it may be that we have to separate for a while. And I think sometimes the word forgiveness is banded around before someone is really able to deal with that if they have been severely abused. Interestingly enough, the statistics on loneliness from the Mental Health Foundation make interesting reading. Between the ages of 22 and 34, 60% of people say that they have been significantly lonely and are significantly lonely in their lives. Over 55, interestingly, these statistics drop to 33%, and they rise again the older you get. I don't know if anybody heard Esther Ranson. For those of you who are younger, I don't want to be patronizing, but she used to do a program called That's Life. You probably know what that is. And she was talking about, on Woman's Hour, actually, about her experience of loneliness. And what she said, her friends found very shocking. It's almost as if it's the last taboo to admit that you're lonely. I know I've had to do that in my life. It's very shameful and shocking, but it is part of the human condition. It was part of Jesus' life. Very lonely, very alone, and I think there's nothing to be ashamed of. Friendship with yourself. Self-obsession is the opposite of self-regard. And I think sometimes, I know for me, I was taught to put myself last, to put others ahead, their needs, the way they think, and push myself down. And I think that probably came from a lack of confidence. So important, I think, that we are heard by others. But in order to love others, it begins with the love for ourselves. Loving yourself as your neighbour is so important. And I don't know about you, and I don't know how you are when you're walking around the festival and you look at other people, or you look at speakers and you think they've got it all together. Believe me, I haven't. I'm sweating quite profusely because I'm quite nervous. We really haven't. My love of God and my journey with God comes from brokenness. Just a little bit of biog. I am a journalist and have been for many, many years, and achieved a modicum of success and have been hired and fired more times than most people have had hot dinners. It's life. And following a breakup of my marriage and then a subsequent breakdown, it was almost as though things were being taken away from me. The person I thought I was is not the person I am now, and it's a continuing journey. And I call it that slightly familiar expression, the dark night of the soul, whereby you go through this bleakness. You don't know if there's a God. There might be a God, but as far as you're concerned, he, she is irrelevant to where you are. And in previous years at Greenblood, I talked about having an eating disorder, and I do a lot of work with people who have addictions now, and that would include drug addiction, alcoholism, sex addiction as well. And the thing about the addict is that you're using something else to replace the hole in the soul. And most of us don't want to go there. Most of us fill it with our work, sometimes religiosity, busy, 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 busy. I go on retreat now quite regularly, and that's not saying that everybody here has to do that, but that is to face myself, and I do a lot of work with a priest, imaging and fantasy, because I still find the Bible quite hard to read, and that's the honest truth, because words, although I use words a lot, I imagine a lot of things in my relationship with Jesus. So friendship with yourselves and cherishing yourself, I really don't believe is selfish. It's absolutely essential. That does not necessarily mean that everyone has to go out and rush out and have therapy, whether it's on the NHS or privately. I've had a lot of it. And to admit I needed help, and I've been part of what we call a 12-step fellowship, which is like Alcoholics Anonymous and all those sorts of things. And you get down on your knees and you admit your powerlessness before God and before the others. And in that powerlessness and in that brokenness, some amazing connections can begin. Some receive Christian teaching, as I say, often possibly reinforces the fact that we must put others first. And I think another part of this too is, I call it the shadow. Well, Jung called it the shadow. When you go to church or your faith community, I used to feel that I had to leave all my neurosis and my depression and all that outside the door. And sometimes what happens is there's a personality split in that you go into a church or faith community, and I'm hoping you're part of one that is actually very accepting, and you feel you can't talk about the marriage that's falling apart. You can't talk about your mental illness. I remember talking once, and a woman came up to me, and she said, I've been depressed for so many years, and people keep saying they're praying for me, and it doesn't go away, and I feel such shame around that. And of course, we all know now in our modern age that depression is an illness, and I wouldn't wish it on anybody. The idea that we're not a good enough Christian, we're not perfect enough. In my journey, we are, in my view, all enough. You are enough, as you are sitting here in your Macs, not having had a shower, like me, today. You are enough. Now, it's easy to say these things. How I practically do this, and it's not because I'm particularly holy, it's a bit like breathing, and I don't almost do it for very long. It's part of my 12-step tradition. I get on my knees and I say, I am powerless over X, and my life has become unmanageable, or I'm powerless. And I do it in the tent with the kids screaming and all the rest of it. That's fine. I don't mind that. And in that place, it's almost like a ripping apart of the heart. I mean, I think God's love is constantly available. But my issues around it are I can't bear it sometimes. I can't bear it. It's almost as though there's too much. So there's an opening up that goes on. And God does accept me and you for who we are. And I love the way Jesus worked with people. And he worked with the dispossessed. He worked with the mentally ill. He worked with the lepers. And I often wonder if Jesus was here now, whether he'd be hanging out with the addicts, whether he'd be in church. I'm not sure. Dare I say it, and this is a bit controversial, I pray for all of those who I can't stand, and that would include Rupert Murdoch. But he is not outside of God's love. He is created in the image of God. His behavior may be completely inappropriate. I've noticed there is a talk on banking here, interestingly enough, and I was really glad that there was, because we can demonize the other, because actually, possibly, we don't want to look at ourselves. Now, I'm not saying that justice isn't important and to be politically aware isn't important, but isn't it interesting how politics demonizes people? We always look to blame somebody else. Maybe you're in a partnership. It's their fault. It's their fault. Bringing it back to yourself and thinking, what is it in me that I can't stand? What is it in me that this person triggers off? I don't believe God is a punishing disciplinarian. I do believe boundaries are important. All the wrongs I have committed, including lying, using other relationships for my own gratification, wounding others with harsh words, have also hurt me as much as the other. In the 12-step tradition, we talk about making amends, and often the biggest amend we have to make is to ourselves. It's quite interesting, because of the way that we have hurt ourselves in our kind of dysfunctional lives. I love the fact that Jesus talks also about the mask. I put a lot of makeup on before I came to this talk, because I'm quite nervous and I thought, you know, I want to look reasonable. Nothing wrong with makeup. I love it. But it's interesting how we will portray a way of being that sometimes is about what others want us to be. If they really knew what I was like, they would reject me. If God really knew what I was like. And believe me, all the issues and fears and sadnesses and failures and joys, let's not be too miserable, everybody, I guarantee, will have experienced in some ways, though their own experiences might be slightly different, because we're all so human. Moving on to family friendships, we all have, or carers, or people that we've been raised by. It's interesting, the disciples broke out of their comfort zones to follow Christ. Must have been very difficult for those they were related to and those that they were connected with. Sometimes that's necessary. When I first came to faith in my teens, I was incredibly sure and certain. Uncertainty is hard to live with, and as you get older, or as I've got older, I hold that probably slightly more successfully. And I remember going back to my parents. I mean, I know this sounds horrendous. I am, you know, in my late 40s or whatever, so this is 25 years ago, and I said, oh, by the way, you're all going to go to hell because you're not a Christian. This dualism. My father, who's from Yorkshire, and he hasn't got such a broad Yorkshire accent, he said, well, you can bloody well, you know. I don't know what you're talking about. You've got the God-bothering thing. That cult has got you. And I think there's an element of being like that. You may not have a Christian faith. It's something you may be exploring here at the festival. But in our Christian life, it's quite easy to alienate the other. My father and I have never really seen eye to eye, and he was an airline pilot and away a lot, and so I didn't get a lot of mirroring from my father. And my mother was an evacuee. She's from the Channel Islands. And had a very tough childhood, as that generation did, full of anger and full of rage. She was adopted, and I bore the brunt of that. And I love her to bits. I'm just telling you how it is. And as a result, grew up with a great insecurity and, surprise, surprise, went on to be a performer. Because I thought, well, if I can't love myself, then other people will love me. And that doesn't always work either. Not to dwell on this for too long, but the reconciliation with my father has come, the more I'm honest about myself. And I said to him, I went over to the Channel Islands to look after my mother with my dad, who did the donkey's work. And that's the basic stuff, as I'm sure you know if you've got an elderly parent or someone you care for. And without being too explicit, but I'm sure you'll probably get the gist, airline pilots perceived to be a very glamorous profession. Actually, there's lots of temptation along the way. And my relationship life hasn't been perfect either. And my mother, in an Alzheimer's moment, says, your father, by the way, our marriage has not been, and et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, actually, this is what's happened in my life, and I'm not perfect either, at which point he burst into tears. And the first time probably my whole life, at the age of about 48 or something, we held each other, and he cried. And I said, Dad, I'm so sorry for judging you. I'm so sorry for not looking at the plank in my own eye and for having a view of you that wasn't human. And from that moment onwards, we still disagree about things. He calls me the God botherer. I don't mind. It doesn't matter. And as I accept him for who he is, so our relationship becomes closer. And that's not always the case with parents. But it's to do with the fact I actually have more love and regard for myself. I have a Christian faith. It is the most important thing to me, as are my relationships. But and my dad knows that. And he got a pamphlet the other day and he says, I've had the God Botherers round. Can you explain it to me? So, you know, we are much more connected. It's the human need, being in community, it's the human need to want to be part of something. And I think St. Paul spent much of his time talking about the inclusive nature of God's love, speaking to those who are frequently excluded from our culture or the culture of the time. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and aliens, but fellow citizens with God's people and members of God's household. Being accepted into community appears to be essential if we are to flourish as human beings. And that's about being accepted as we are. I can't generalise, but I know in my own community, I'm part of something called the Moot Community, which always makes me laugh when I say we're fresh expressions, which sounds like a deodorant. But anyway, fresh expressions. And we are a relational, not perfect, there's no such thing as a perfect church. And there is an element of real sharing with each other and being able to be honest. I don't know what kind of communities you're part of. It can be sport communities, it can be theatre communities, it can be whatever it happens to be. Having somewhere to go where you feel you can relax and be who you are. That's still a struggle to me, but at the same time, it's a huge improvement. And I take risks and I tell people how I'm really feeling, and I think that gives other people space to also tell me too. Don't talk to strangers. This is one of my real passions, actually. It's about the other. And Jesus taught that we should love the other. I actually don't like the word should, oughts, and must, actually. It is what it is. But went on to say that the enemy demands our love as much as the friend, hence my reference to Rupert Murdoch earlier. Now, this seems an impossible task at surface level. I mean, when two people can't get on in a marriage, how on earth is there going to be peace between Israel and Palestine? That always ceases to, always constantly amazes me. Amazing as well in the Irish connection, how those bridges have been built. Sometimes I think we feel that we mustn't be jealous. It's normal. You might walk around here and go, oh, I'm jealous, I wish I was like them, or they look great, or whatever it happens to be. Scapegoating the other is a really interesting concept. There's a guy called James Allison, who is a theologian, that really changed and challenged a lot of my thinking, and he talks about the fact that we scapegoat the other, again, to avoid this looking at ourselves. And I really don't mean to encourage self-obsession, but part of my Christian journey has really been to look at myself so that I can accept the other. And the story that best probably illustrates that is there's a guy on my street called Joe who's an alcoholic. And at the time of my worst depression, and I have felt suicidal in the past, when I was very, very low, I would go out onto the street. I have a small bedroom flat in London, and I would walk down to get the milk. And when I felt like that, bizarrely, I'd always meet Joe. And he was what I would describe as my angel. I love the idea of learning from the most vulnerable in our culture. And I said to him, you're my angel, at which point he burst into tears, because he always had something to say that would be uplifting. Sadly, he died. He died in a very undignified way in his flat, and I wish I'd gone to the funeral, because I've learnt so much. I can't remember the name of the theologian, but there is a theologian who talks about the non-traditional theology. The traditional theology is that we pastor to, sort people's problems out, minister to other people. The non-traditional theology is where we learn from others. There was an example of a man who was homeless and had a mental health problem, and he helped out with he went to the homeless group that the church was involved in, and then he wanted to help, and the church said, I'm sorry, you can't help because we help you. How bizarre, how exclusive is that? And God's love has to be inclusive, otherwise it's not proper love at all. Look carefully for those you resent because they are normally carrying at least some of what you hate, deny, or reject within yourself. How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own and my own? Little friends in my life. I've already spoken to probably about 20 children around me, and I just love their joie de vivre. It may be what they call in popular psychobabble, inner child. I have a strong inner child. I love to play, I love all of the rest of it, and I think that's possibly to do with the fact I don't have kids myself. One of the things, and if you're a parent, you might actually find this frustrating, is that kids tend to let you know exactly how they feel. They lash out, they have tantrums, and the mother by my tent was screaming no at her child to whatever he or she was doing, but they're very, very honest. They haven't learnt the the boundaries about being acceptable when they feel angry. And I find that honesty quite moving, actually, because so often, particularly anger, is one of these things that's very, very hard to express and express appropriately. Just to tell a little story about my own family, my sister is in the States and has two little boys. And I think she's exploring her faith, and her husband, I think the jury's out for him. But she wanted me to be godparent to the youngest, Oliver. And so I said to Oliver, oh, by the way, Mum wants me to talk you through what you're saying. And it's an Episcopalian tradition, and he had to say, I renounce evil. And he's only six. I renounce evil. And we went to the christening. He stood on a box in front of the font. His brother, Henry, who's 2 years older, then threw up in the font. So the priest was trying to do all the stuff, you know, trying to avoid the carrots. Oh, sorry, but it's true. It's a real story. So what happened at the end of it, and I said to Oliver, I said, look, you know, let's forget all the I renounce evil. He did it very well, and everything went fine. I said, all it is, Oliver, is God wants to be your friend, and you can decide whether you want to be a friend back. Simple. Children are perceptive. And he looked at me, and he says, okay, I kind of get that. Can I go play Lego? And that was enough. And that was enough. I don't feel I have to push myself on a child. It's like accepting them. And that's where he's at, really, I suppose. Old friends. This is one of the things, again, I'm passionate about. As much as I like children, I have this passion for the elderly. We live in this Botox culture, don't we? We live in this facelift culture that to get old is somehow a crime. If you read the Daily Mail, I don't always hate the Daily Mail, but if you get pregnant and you don't get your stomach back within 3 days, you should go to prison. What's all that about? Cellulite? Somehow, it's not acceptable. I mean, that's the female pressure, and I think there are pressure on men too, and particularly in our culture, about being young and keeping in the work rat race. People are having facelifts to try and keep young so they keep their jobs. It's tremendous pressure to put what is our own mortality at bay, effectively. I have learned, and my mother's evacuee story is a fascinating one, where I was most moved by the elderly experience was I had a suspected hernia and was put in the old people's ward in the A&E. There was no other space. And I was opposite me was a woman called Bessie, who was 84 on an oxygen cylinder. And at that time, I smoked. And she said to me, can I have a cigarette, please? And obviously it was an inappropriate place for her to have a cigarette, and it wouldn't help her health overall. And next to her was a wonderful black woman who I think came from the Pentecostal tradition, and I won't try and do the accent, but she said, Bessie, need the Lord, Bessie, need the Lord. And she kept saying that for most of the night. And then the woman next to me was going, nurse, all through the night as well. It was actually a really amazing experience. Anyway, I found a dog-eared... I didn't get much sleep, but, you know, I learned something. I found a dog-eared issue of Cosmopolitan, probably dating back to 1963. No, it's slightly more modern than that. And in this Cosmopolitan was 10 places to make love to your partner. So I went over to Bessie, and I thought, well, I'll read something to her. And I read this 10 thing out. She asked me for a cigarette again, but, you know... I think she got a bit stressed. Actually, she really took to it, and she winked at me, and she said, number 3, Margate. And this idea, too, that older people don't have physical relationships, just stop that right now, okay? There's been some wonderful series on the radio, actually, about the celebration of physical relationships and love relationships, right from 80 down to 18. Blessed are those who find wisdom and who acquire understanding. They are more precious than jewels. And that comes from the wisdom literature. But it's something that's so easy to forget. So if you bump into someone, I mean, I'm a lot older probably than some of you. If you bump into me and I'm hobbling along, do say hello if you're, you know, younger than me. And similarly, it's looking at people in a slightly different way. Woman to woman, man to man. Now, I know generalizations can be unhelpful, and I'm going to make them, and please accept my apologies. The story of the man who goes into the pub and whose marriage is falling apart, and he talks about football and doesn't mention anything or can't mention anything about the fragility of his relationship, and then goes home and drinks himself to death. Now, that isn't necessarily true of men being uptight about their feelings, and increasingly I think that's changing. Certainly when I was younger, there was much more of a division. It's interesting, when you talk to men and women, And of course, we're both created in the image of God. I mean, that's so important. You'll ask a man about how your day was. Again, forgive me if this is a generalization. It's anecdote, which I know is the killer of argument. And a man will say, I did this, I did that, I saw this, I did that. And that's great, functional. A woman will go, what did you do today? Well, I felt this thing, right, and I saw this person, and we talked about this, and you know what? It was fascinating. And then this other thing happened. And the women will tend to talk about their feelings around something. And friendships can sometimes be based on that. Now, friendships between men and women, really, really important, and I've got good friendships now with men. But I probably have my closest friendships with women, I would say, and that's not may not be the same for all of you. And it took me a long time. I got divorced in my in 1997, and for no reason, it's no one's fault, when I left the marriage, no one in the church contacted me, partly because they didn't know where I was. And I used to get through the day going to talk to someone in a shop. That was it. And that may sound sad, and it is sad, actually. And I realised that I hadn't really learned to make friends properly. I hadn't learned because I was scared. I hadn't learned to reveal my vulnerabilities because I thought it's important to be strong and not tell people that you're struggling with things. And as we heard a moment ago, actually vulnerability is very much part of the Christian journey. So that kind of learning, I suppose, and maybe looking at yourself and thinking, well, actually, could I learn from the way men do things? I know that I worked for Women's Hour, actually. It was the hardest place I ever worked. There was so much competition, but women wouldn't admit it. And I worked for another television station, and the men were much more upfront about conflict and knew where you are, and they would forget it. Whereas I know I will hold resentments, and I'm sure all of us do. But I think it's there are different ways of being. There are different ways of connecting, and the sexes, I think, is an interesting area, the gender area. And again, I have made generalizations, and I'm sure there are plenty of exceptions. Losing friends. This is really interesting, and I know a lot of people who, say for example, had a problem with drugs, they would have to walk away from those they used with in order to get well. There are also people who are not friends at all. They are simply masquerading as such. I don't know if you have anybody in your life who rings you up when they want something, then you never hear of them again until they want something else. I think it's maybe important for you and I to ask ourselves, how nurturing is that for us? How appropriate is that for us? I don't think it's loving to ourselves, or particularly Christian, to give and give and give until we're run out. It may be that we get a lot of identity from giving, and I think loving other people is really important. But if we are drained like a sponge squeezed out, what do we have to give? Burnout, I think, is very common, not only in the corporate sector, but within the Christian community as well. And I know from my own experience, I have to have a balance of people in my life who I know are nurturing and loving, as well as those who might be slightly more challenging. I actually ask God to bring those people into my life who will teach me something, and sometimes that's a bit scary, as well as I know from my own experience, I've been dropped as a friend when I was quite draining, and someone, a very close friend of mine, we just reconnected after 20 years on email, so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. That was very painful. But these are small steps, small childhood steps towards becoming more whole. We do live in a culture that's, I think, have I said this? I can't remember, but that's very eroticized, and our friendships are very heavily influenced by the culture of, we are defined by the sexual relations we have or we don't have. We can look upon friends as commodities, people who can make us feel better. They used to call me when I worked for ITN the networker-seeking missile, or the career-seeking missile. I was one of those people, I'm ashamed to admit. And you might see a bit of that here, where I would be talking to someone, but looking over their shoulder to see who else was coming in the room, so I could make contact with them. And how sad, because I wasn't present to myself, and I wasn't present to the other person. And now that sort of thing isn't so important to me. It's not about how another person can fix me and how another person can make me feel better or help me in my career. Those things happen now much more naturally. And joys of long-term friendships. I'm sure many of you have friends that have gone back years, people that you can love and who love you. They're so worth nurturing. And we live in a very fast-moving culture. And I'm not getting into the internet and Facebook. I think there's great use for all of that. I can't really, I'm not one of these people that says, oh, it's evils. I don't I don't do that. But I think we live in a very fast-moving culture. Many of us don't live near our families, and even those who do, there are issues around that as well. So nurturing other people takes time. It does mean having a cup of coffee, and rushing and rushing and rushing actually means that we don't ever get to know them or ourselves. And that, I know we lead busy lives, and particularly if you're a parent, you're juggling everything, but just spending time to think about that other person or send them a text or know that you're thinking about them can really nurture and set the foundations for friendship. Am I meant to go on a bit longer than that? I think I might be. But anyway, never mind. There's going to be time for questions now, actually. I have been told that by the organisers. I need to mention my little book. My dad calls it... That's no book. That's a bloody pamphlet. He actually isn't that broad Yorkshire. There's a bit of Yorkshire in me. It is a small book. It's called Friendship. It's £4.99, and you can read it in about 2 minutes. Well, you know, we live in a quick-fix society, fast food books, and they've asked me very kindly to do a book signing at 2:45. That's enough of that. So I've mentioned that. I've whistle-stopped through quite a lot of things, I know, and there's a lot to take in. But there's time for questions. There's a roving mic, so just make sure that our roving mic man here is near you. It's John, isn't it? John, yeah. When you ask questions, I mean, hopefully you'll have some. It doesn't matter if you haven't. So thank you for listening.
Hello. I'm a mum, and my eldest daughter has just started school this last year. And it is really hard watching her trying to make friends. And girls are just awful with each other. You know, they're friends one minute, they're not friends the next minute. Wondering if you've got any tips as a mum, I know you're not one, but on how to help your children with the friendships.
It's really difficult as well, because the whole thing about finding your own tribe, and actually, just I will answer your question. If you're born into a family that's all blonde and you're short and dark, you may think you're wrong. But eventually you'll meet a whole group of people who are short and dark, and suddenly you think, you know what, I'm coming home, this is my group of people. Sometimes it takes our time to do that. In answer to your question, I mean, this is really familiar to me. People have often asked me about the teenagers thing, and for the parent, it's just awful to see them going through, I mean, as you say with girls, they'll be one gang one day, another gang the other. I suppose my suggestion would be is that you are... I mean, it is a tough world out there, and learning... I mean, providing she's not being bullied, I mean, that's a different kind of thing, and bullying can be sometimes borderline. But giving her the... I mean, you look like you're quite an open person, but giving her the space to tell you things so she doesn't feel that anything she tells you is... You're going to judge her for that. And I actually think, without being over the top, it's to tell the child, you know, she's great, and be specific about why you think she's great. The parents of my generation had real difficulty in that, with that kind of generosity. I know we can go overboard in our culture and be over touchy-feely. In some ways, I think loving children, they need to hear that, particularly teenage girls who are going through so much. And particularly, too, if they're in conflict as well with another teenager. And sometimes she probably wants to go up to her room and bang the door and doesn't want to talk to you. I mean, that's another thing, and do a Facebook. As I'm not a mum, you're going to be in tears over it, as I'm sure you may have been. But my suggestion would be to remind her of the things that you love about her, and enable her to bring some of those conflicts to you if she feels she wants to. And I haven't really got any massive parenting tips, but I hope that helps.
Hi. Just to answer that lady, must read a book called It's Not Fair. I can't remember. It's two women authors. It's fantastic. It goes into all of that. Bright and challenging children from, I think it's 8 to 11. Read it. It's fantastic. Anyway, I've just moved somewhere and married and moved somewhere completely where I don't know anybody, and I'm getting to know people. But my question is it... Should I contact my old friends who have kind of I've lost contact with? And you know, you were saying about some people you should lose, and if they're not contacting you, then you should lose them. But there are some people in my past that they are on Facebook, and I don't know whether I should actually go and go back to them or whether I should concentrate on making new friends. And how do you do that when you, especially in Wales where I am, it's quite hard. I'm not Welsh, so it's quite difficult. But how, you know, how should I do that? Should I rekindle those, or do you think I should leave those alone if they haven't contacted me?
Can I just turn that around to ask you a question? What does your gut, your intuition tell you to do? Because I think sometimes people lose touch with that. What, I mean, there may be a number of people that you really feel sad about missing. I mean, what does your gut tell you? Well, don't you know yet?
I don't know.
That's fine. We actually know what we want half the time, but it takes a while to discover it. I think it's very hard to connect. I mean, there's like rings of friendship. You know, you've got your possibly very close people, then you've got people outside who are more acquaintances. Your needs, if you've just moved, there's a lot of newness, probably a lot of loneliness as well. I wanted to talk to somebody. I would, if I was in your situation, possibly take a risk and connect with someone who I think might be able to understand that situation. It may be that you don't feel lonely. I've no idea. But it's a big, moving to any location is a big shift. And the fact of the matter is, particularly if you're a parent as well, it's very hard to go schlepping off to the other side of the country. I really get that. But at the same time, if there are people within your circle or who you left behind, I mean, and there are, you can't be friends, you can't keep going. I mean, whenever I've worked anywhere, I've normally left with one friend who sometimes I've kept in contact, because it's impossible to keep in contact with everybody. So I would, again, small steps. I mean, I would Facebook them if you think that that's something that you would like to do. But there's no pressure on you to do it with everybody. And I think possibly ask the God of your understanding, if you like, to show you what your intuition tells you. And it sounds like you're doing all those things that are nurturing to yourself. And this other pressure to kind of rush around when you're in a new place, I've got to meet lots of people. That also is very punishing, I think, sometimes. Just these steps to take. So I mean, that would be my suggestion. Pick those people that you can probably be yourself with, who can give you some kind of emotional support in what is quite a challenging situation.
Hi, thanks. Oh, thanks very much. I was wondering what you think we can learn from God about friendship.
Well, I'm constantly learning, actually. I think I mentioned at the beginning of the talk that I've had to re-friend God. I'll give her a credit, actually, Vanessa, I don't think she's here, but she said to me once, she said, you know, God has so much respect for us. Well, that was a really interesting thing to say. I can only really talk anecdotally, rather than give you lots of Bible verses to support my argument, so forgive me if that's not enough. In my retreat journey, I've done a lot of fantasy visualization work, and I'll keep it brief, but we did this thing with my priest about a statue, where I was a statue, and Jesus came into the room, and we had conversations in our imaging. And there was something that happened there. I can't really describe. I guess it was a spiritual experience. And I suddenly felt, I mean, this is really hard because it's anecdote, that this sense of being accepted, and then for the first time, I had real problems due to my past to actually say the word Jesus. I would use the word Christ all the time. It didn't feel so full on. But I was able to talk about Jesus in a way in this imaginary conversation. And I used imagining, I've kind of forgotten the book, but it's what I call the Ignatian tradition of spirituality that can really help you do some visualization in terms of, I mean, someone else may have suggestions about that. God being our friend, I mean, it's being our accompanier through things, that might be better, because friendship conjures up, you know, those little things like you're my best friend or whatever it happens to be, which is slightly twee, but our accompanier through things. But I'm under no illusion that it doesn't feel that way. Sometimes it really doesn't feel that way, and sometimes all we can do, I mean, we have to maybe go through a time we think, I don't believe in God, I don't know, I wouldn't know, that's perfectly acceptable. God believes in us. I really just think it's basic, you know. I'll stop here, I'll not give you a lecture, but which I'm doing, but it's as basic as, and it, getting on your knee, I mean, I get on my knees and I think something shifts in my willingness to be open. It's not been a magic. I haven't had a magic experience particularly, or felt the surge of the spirit, and I would like that a bit more. I think the response from us maybe is just has to be simple. to learn God as the accompanier. And in the Psalms, they rage and they let God into all of the shit of their lives. And I think we can do that as well, you know, like the children throwing the toys out of the pram. We can do that with God. That may help. Thank you.
I'd be really interested if you could explore a little more about finding your own tribe, because as you get older, that really gets different, because you have to leave people behind. And if it's about expressing your faith, it's, you know, a lot of judgment from other people. And
There's a book called Women Who Run With the Wolves by Clarissa something, Estes Pinkola. And it is about just that place. I love the fact that you mentioned as you get older, because people move on, people change. There is that moment too, if you have children, when they leave home. And I mean, I don't know what your background is or where you've come from or where you are. I guess it's finding people with whom you feel really at ease in terms of actually discovering people, if you can. And it may be a smaller group of people that you feel you can connect with. And the tribal thing is very interesting, because I actually do think that we will always connect with some people more than others. And you mentioned people judging, I think. Did you mention that? Have you been judged? Is that what you feel? Could you just say a little more about that, in terms of, if you don't mind, just so I can...
Yes, we're in a church situation where our expression was more, I guess, emerging and open, where a very judgmental situation occurred. And, you know...
Within that community something happened.
Yeah, that's right, yes. And so we had to leave that community, and we had very close friends who we just don't see anymore because of that.
Mm. I've experienced that within... That's why, I mean, there's no such thing as perfect churches, but these things can be incredibly wounding, and when relationships go wrong, they can be devastating. What I would say, again, it may not be possible to reconnect with this person if what happened was so distressing, and there may have been abuse involved or whatever it happens to be. I don't know the circumstances. Again, I suppose praying for the people, but you may not be in that place either, for those that have really caused you pain. And it may be that you reconnect 10 years from now. And there is grief. That's the other thing I would really acknowledge about that. There is such grief when relationships go wrong, particularly as we get older and we thought they were one way and stuff happened and they weren't. And there's a little bit of, I mean, the tribal thing, churches can be very tribal, and if something happens, all the people don't fit in. And it happens in Fresh Expressions as much as it happens anywhere. I mean, we had a situation whereby someone had to be let go, and it was incredibly painful because we're inclusive, you know, and it seemed, but the lessons we learn from that is that we're also human as well. And to really look at your own pain and what was prompted within you. It's easy to focus on that person. They did this, they did that, they were really awful. Yeah, they may well have been. But bringing up your own feelings. I know when I lost a friend, the grief was huge. And allowing yourself to grieve and honour, that's a lovely word, I love that word, honour that grief. And honour the rage as well, if you have that. I don't know whether you're in another community now. I guess we learn things. I hate that we learn lessons from things. I don't believe that God wants to beat us over the head and teach us lessons. But, you know, there are two ways to go. There is resentment, which means that we are always holding on to the resentment because it actually serves us, to be perfectly honest. Whilst we're in that place, we don't have to let go and rethink. Letting go of resentment is the hardest thing to do. Letting go of resentment is a long process. But it frees us at the end of the day. And there may come a time when you might be able to say to them, and this has worked for me, is there anything, it may not, but is there anything that you need me to say to you? Rather than saying, I want to say I'm sorry, or, you know, I want to say this. This worked really well with me, and I had behaved in a way that wasn't appropriate, and I said, I know this has happened. What is it you might need to say to me? And that gives another person the freedom to say, F off, or, well, actually, I felt this. I hope that's helpful.
Hi. I'm in a situation at the moment where I've got to know somebody through my small child. And initially we thought we had a lot in common and everything was going smoothly until we went camping together. And now, I have severe allergies, and so I am in a situation where I have to be able to trust adults in my company. And I found myself actually having to abort the camping trip. And I'm in a situation now where on Wednesday I'm going to be meeting this person for the first time since this aborting of the holiday. And I just wondered if you had any strategies on how to make sure I protect myself, but also to perhaps let her know how she made me feel without coming across being bitchy or rude or judgmental, because I don't want to be judgmental, but she was quite lazy and useless, to be honest.
Just like tell it how it is, you know. That's probably one of the best ways. I mean, this is the whole issue with friendship. It's often over the minutiae, isn't it? It's the small things that really annoy you. And I mean, it sounds like the allergy thing, it's your health.
It could have been quite fatal.
You could have ended up, you have an EpiPen or something. Yeah, we have a friend like that. If he eats nuts, he's dead. And he's had, you know, he's had to be gone to A&E many times. And I think the ways, it's really interesting. We have no control over another person's response, but we do have an element of choice about the way we are. So I would really, because I do this, so you're holding this resentment. I've got to say it, and I don't know how it's going to say it. It probably won't come out right, but my suggestion would be in your circumstance, negligence is as dangerous as being overwhelming. I felt that, rather than saying you did, and this is the way I do it, I felt that that you didn't hear me about the blah, 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 peanuts or wherever it was. It may sound silly, but actually what it does for me and I is XXX. And what I need you to do is XX, be really clear. Now, this person might go into all kinds of emotional blah, 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 blah. You can just repeat it a bit like a broken record. Now, that's a slightly formulaic. But it's really important. You know, if you're created in the image of God, your allergies are important.
Yeah.
I mean, it's as simple as that. But holding, I find it really hard to say, actually, when this happened, I felt this.
Well, yeah, because I feel strong in the fact that the reason why I had to abort it was she made me feel so unsafe. Yeah. And I had to look after my children and me.
Yeah.
So therefore, I just had to say, this isn't working, I'm going home. And I gave her the feeble excuse that the kids were driving me mad.
No, but you did what? No, but you looked after yourself, didn't you?
Yes.
You looked after yourself, no matter how you went about it. The thing about saying, and I honestly, I'm not perfect, but think about, you made me do this. Arguably, it's our choice to respond in a certain way. So what you did then, what happened, rather than saying, what happened to me was I was unable to go because I was really frightened about the fact that my health would be challenged by that. And I was really frightened. And that, if you talk about feelings in that way, she can't turn around and say, no, you weren't really frightened. You were.
Yeah.
But the more you say, you made me, it's your behaviour, and it was inappropriate behaviour, actually.
Yeah.
And you can say, look, this is inappropriate behaviour, but let me tell you what happens. And actually, if you're not able to make a choice to help me, I really won't be able to go on holiday with you, and that would be really sad.
Yeah. Excellent.
That's all right.
Thank
but
you.
That's just a suggestion. It's really holding our own truth. Mm. But it doesn't matter if it all comes out wrong and you burst into tears. That's fine.
Oh, that's what I don't want
stuff
to
happens all. We're only human. You know what? I can sound like a self-help book here, but I get it wrong all the time. You did this. I hate you. You know, but that's the theory.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Hi, Claire.
Hello.
I identified with your relationship with your father, though mine's got more of a Devonshire accent than a Yorkshire accent.
It's one of the best accents in the world, yeah.
I'm just curious how I'm quite young in my Christian faith, and my dad, even if he said God mob, would probably rather keel over than say the word God. So I'm just curious how you deal with that relationship with your father, and whether you can say to me in X amount of years it will be better or worse or that type of thing, really.
It's interesting because actually that's indicative of another thing. I think it sounds like your father's not hearing you and choosing not to hear you. And for a child, whatever age, to not be heard, a secure person may say, you know what, I really don't believe in God and I'm an atheist, but I respect your spirituality. There is a thought, when we talk about abuse, we talk about spiritual abuse, actually. And I don't mean that your father's bad, but there is something in him that can't cope with that. And that was, my father said, you know, if my plane was crashing, I wouldn't be praying to God, I'd be trying to sort out the crash out, as though the two are mutually exclusive. Of course, that's what he's trained to do. I don't know what kind of parenting you have. I would say at your sort of age, it is hard, because it was hard for me, and it's a time thing. Some stuff happens in our lives that sometimes brings people closer together, and that rigid position that he has, which he's entitled to, will be for something else. It might be that those conversations aren't going to get anywhere. But it's really hard. If your faith is important to you and you're maybe doing something that's linked to that, it might be to do with justice or... I mean, my dad's big thing was vegetarianism. And I'm not a vegetarian, but he used to have a go at vegetarianism. He somehow used to link it with Christianity. I don't really quite know how that link was made. Maybe it was something to do with the cows or the pigs in the Bible. I have no idea. And it would use this very simply... And I could see the folly of his intellectual argument, but he was actually very... He felt very inadequate that I'd gone to university and he hadn't. There's all this... It's seeing our parents as human beings. But like I was saying to the lady with the allergies... Sorry. Did you say Claire, your name was? Yeah, okay. Boundaries about your parents. It's about sometimes taking yourself away from them. I couldn't go home for... I'm not suggesting you do this, but I couldn't go home for 3 years in my 20s. It was too painful. I was too vulnerable for various reasons. And sometimes just saying, actually, this is really important to me, my faith, I know you don't agree with it, I haven't lost my mind, I'm exploring this, and in a sense, we're all on a journey. I can't do the Devon accent, all right, don't be so touchy-feely, you. Sorry, that's probably terrible. What sounds is like he's not prepared to hear you at where you are now. And I'd say in some ways that's more painful than him not believing. I think you could probably cope with that. It's a judgment around it. I mean, when you presumably, I come here and I say, Dad, I'm doing the God Bothering Festival, and he said, all right, I said, it doesn't get rained on, you know. And it's a kind of a, we've got to that point, but you know, I'm 49, 50 next month, so it's taken me a while. It's not a quick fix. And the other thing is praying for those. I'm praying for the openness of mind, and I have prayed for my dad, who's moved from atheism to agnosticism. It's nothing to do with me. God asked me why, you know, how he's moved along, you know, but I think that's because of mum and everything. So it is a slow process, and I don't have any quick fixes, but holding yourself is really important, and being able to talk to someone about it too. Okay, we've got time for one more question, I think.
Hi, Claire. There's been a lot about the inner child. In fact, lots of questions about children as well. I just wonder, do you think there's a connection between friendship and curiosity and playfulness? And if there is, what about, you know, we guys, the other side of whatever chromosome it is, who take ourselves a little bit more seriously? How would you push us on in terms of friendship?
Just say that last bit again. It was a bit quick.
Well, we men who were slightly more, you know, what I did today, blah, blah, blah. Very serious. How would you encourage us to lighten up a little bit?
Oh, right, okay. Honestly, I haven't got the solution to what... I mean, I like to see... there are lots of things I like to see. I like men being with their mates as well, in a way, and having fun with them. And if that means going to the pub and having a few drinks and having a laugh... I don't know how busy you are in your work life, but I often hear men say and lament, I haven't got time for me. It's really interesting. And women may say that, but for men, it's, I haven't got time for me. I'm caring for everybody else. I'm not prioritising. I don't know whether you have, you know, any passions that you particularly like. I mean, it might be that you like going to see comedy. But I actually think relationships are... Maybe you can also take a risk with somebody. It may backfire because all of these things, and say, actually, you know, can we just do something fun? I mean, you've come here, right? So... pick something that you would not normally go and see. I mean, not something you'd hate, obviously. I don't know, something you think, some weird band, some performance art, and just do something getting out of the box, you know, that you wouldn't normally... I have no idea what you do in your life or anything, but something that would be... and just see what comes up. Maybe take a guy that you know, from the ten, two of you. I mean, it might be that you love football, great. Football's a religion as well, nothing wrong with that. Being able to swear for 90 minutes is really important. I think, guys, I mean, if you go to the hymn singing here, actually, the men, it's normally very much more men there, they love it. There's something about, you know, and I'm not saying the women don't, but I've just watched it. It's much more male orientated. And I'm not psychologically sophisticated enough to know why, but those are my kind of suggestions. Maybe go to the hymn thing, all right? And something else weird and wonderful that you wouldn't normally go to. That would be my suggestion. Yeah. We've just about come to the end.
Shall I say there's time just for one more?
If okay, a short one. If oh, no, go on, go ahead. This is our last one then, I think.
Hi, Claire, thanks. arrange the thoughts. The thing that's come through to me, for me personally, from this, has been how do I deal with being the friend that's been dropped? I feel on several occasions I have been the person that's been a pain and hasn't...
Oh, bless you. That is probably a really good question. That you all right? If you have a cry, it's fine.
Maybe I'm too old for that now. I don't know. But it's having passed a certain age, you get to the stage where you think, forget it. Let's just not bother anymore. Let it all hang out. Who cares?
First of all, can I just say how humble it is to say that in a group like this at the end as well? And it's really touching. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I think, again, I'm very big on grief. The little griefs in our lives. Often we think we need to grieve for a partner. We need to grieve, in my case, for a cat or something. I love my cat. It's like a child. That's why I say that, not superficially.
I've been there, done that as well, yeah.
But I think, okay, so you were let go. It doesn't mean you're evil or wrong or not enough. And also to it, because that's a normal conclusion we come from. I must say, yeah, you may have done stuff, but you didn't murder anybody.
I think it's probably not done stuff in my case.
Okay, you may not have been a friend or been able to be there, but you would have had your reasons for that. And I think it sounds as if you're very repentant about that, and it's left you with quite a lot of pain from what you're saying. I mean, is this a friendship that could be reconnected or not really? Or
probably not. It's a while ago. It's when our kids were young, and they're grown up now. So
yeah, I think those old things that happened, and it seems as like there's a real loss, isn't there? There's a real sense of sadness.
She was a good mate.
Yeah,
yeah, we could share things.
Did you know where she is now? Do you know where she is now?
Approximately. I knew where she was about 5 years ago, but
okay.
I don't know if she's still there.
You might. I know I sound very sort of like God-bothering like this. I shouldn't apologise, but the prayer thing, you know?
Yeah.
Ask for the feel. One of the things when you pray on your knees is that the real feelings come up about what's going on and the sadness and the grief. I mean, often I'll pray, if I'm here, I'll cry because something will have emerged from something I've seen or touched. And these are... I bet you've held it all these years, this
it's been a little niggle all this time, off and on, yeah.
Well, that's telling you something. Yeah. And I think take your time, and if you're able to connect, that's great. It might be that you pray for the best, that God gives her what she needs. You don't know what that is. But also God gives you maybe new friends coming into your life. And I mean, these are difficult areas, but it does sound that there's quite a lot of grief there, which I think is worth acknowledging, that there's a loss. It's always a loss. And it's not silly. It's human. Mm. I hope that helps. I know from my own experience of losing a friend how sad I felt and how abandoned. And it also can trigger a lot of other abandonments that we may have experienced when we're smaller. So
yeah, you think, is it worth trying to make friends with anybody again? Really? Sometimes.
Well, that's normal to think that too. What's the point? The risk is too much. The alternative to that, and that's fine, that's where you are right now, that's fine. It may be, though, that the risk is, I suppose, an isolation. But don't feel you have to rush around. And maybe, I like to use examples of here, maybe just ask and see what happens while you're at Greenbelt. See what happens in terms of the conversations you have. Well, I like to begin now rather than wait until you get home or wherever you come from. And if you need to go and find someone to cry with, or something, that's allowed as well. You know, there's wonderful people around here and resources. I'm a big believer in all of that, you know. I cry all the time. And it's not just over stupid films either. All right, lovey? I've started you off now. Very honest question. And I'm very moved and humbled that you asked it, and that took a lot of courage. All right? Thank you very much. Thank all of you. Thanks for coming. And I really wish for you that whatever you need from Greenbelt, God is able to give that to you. Thanks very much.